Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Bryce Castillo.
Oh, hi, everybody. That's me.
And Mr. Brian Brushman.
Yo, yo, yo. Fixing the world, one show at a time.
So we have a question here. And this is from Arthur. He says, hey, guys, I have a question for the show. I find myself working on projects that start off exciting and bringing them to final stages, ready for the public, but then get nervous and find excuses to jump onto something newer, more exciting project. Sometimes the reasons seem very rational, but I worry that something is holding me back. Your fan, Arthur.
Andrew, do you have a pen name?
I was going to make that same joke.
This is me. Arthur.
This guy out, guys. Really? Really? This guy's asking a question.
Arthur Mang.
Arthur Train here. The question for everybody.
Arthur Massachusetts.
Oh, I see. Just going to mock me. It's fine.
Well, I guess in that regard, Arthur, you asked the right person. Andrew, is this something you can relate to?
I wanted to write in there, by the way, Andrew, you don't answer this.
Rubbing my pain with his finger.
And all seriousness, this is the thing that keeps coming up for me, and I could give myself an answer, but I'd probably rather hear an answer, and that is... Because I wanted to talk about, like, I'm in the middle of my project Audiomatic, which helps you take a story or whatever and convert it into a multicast audiobook. I got it into, like, I think the final stages before I let other people use it, and then I figure out what's broken and I need to fix it. But it's the anxiety stage. It's that, oh, geez, what do I do now? And I did it, like, I wrote it like a question like this because I didn't want to make it about Audiomatic, but we'll make it about that. That's fine. Here's my hesitation with Audiomatic. Audiomatic uses Google's WaveNet voices, which are really good to convert text into speech with different characters, different speeches, people speaking. It allows you to add background music, etc. I love it. I think it sounds really cool. Now, every time I use the Google speech conversion thing, there's a cost. It's not a lot, but it's $16 per million characters, which is about... you know, $16 per 150,000 words, which again is not a lot. But if I said, hey, everybody can use this, and all of my writer friends started uploading their novels, I would have, you know, thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth bills. So I'm trying to figure out the right way to use it. Like, I set up a system that gives you credit, so you get like 10,000 words per month or something or whatever.
And we, but, I guess it's worth reminding the audience what this project is. Essentially, basically, it makes... pretty good enough audiobooks, and for somebody who wouldn't have the ability to spend the money for an actual narrator.
Yeah, and what it does is you add text to it, and then you click convert. If it's let's say it's a story and there are different speakers, it says this person's speaking here, this person's speaking there. Do you want to use a different voice for that? And then it will create a MP3 file, and you can add artwork, and actually you can deliver it as a podcast. So you basically, I give you a podcast feed. And so like in my podcast feed, every time I create something and make it public, it shows up. And so you can basically do text to podcasting with it.
Let's work backwards from the nightmare scenario where you wake up and there are, let's say $10,000 of bill. You get a bill from Google for $10,000. How many authors does
Brian
that mean?
Brian and Justin get phone calls. Guys, I need $10,000 fast.
How many? I mean, like, I guess what I'm thinking is if you're in that situation, how many authors have you reached? And is that an indication that you have a genuine hit on your hands? And then now, like, wouldn't that mean that now you get to seek outside investors to really blow this thing up? But I don't know if those numbers track or not. Like, let's say if
how much would it cost to do one novel? Maybe we could start there. Do you have an idea of how much it would cost to for one person to do one novel through Audiomatic?
$20. my cost.
Yeah.
Great. So you charge, you do it for free until, so let's say $20. So that would make it what? $500 novels.
$10,000.
So if you do 500 novels free, now you have a proof of concept. And yes, it'll be uncomfortable to be on the hook for $10,000. But at this point, you get to turn around and say, hey, this is the situation we're in. If this is working out for you, please give me $50 because the product will now cost $100 per novel going forward. It's going to be great. And so let's say you lose 80% of your audience at that point and only 100 of them stick around to pay $99 per novel, at which point you now have $10,000 to cover that bill.
Well, here's my – I don't really want to use it as primarily like a way to turn novels into audiobooks. I want to use it as – and again, this could be my naivety or my arrogance or whatever. Like, I want to make it easier for people to do shorter form content. I want this to be the person that says, I want to take my novel and I want to serialize it over the next 3 months into chapter by chapter, or I want to write something for this. Or I want to write, you know, self-help advice and make it into audio, into a podcast. I think of it as a podcast sort of format. And I want to make it available to everybody. I want a platform that, like, anybody who hates your stupid voice but you want to do a podcast, this is for you.
So virtualizing the host into a written source.
Yeah, or think of it as Medium or, you know, WordPress or other things that we do, and how, what the WordPressification of podcasting. You know, we take for granted our comfort, but look at, you know, what our infrastructure around us to do podcasts. Most people don't have that. And there are a lot of people who like to write and would love to be doing podcast medium or audio content. And I would like to make this as free and available for as many people as possible.
Then figure out the dividing line between, okay, so then you charge for audiobooks because everyone knows audiobooks makes money, and you make it free for podcasts because everyone knows podcasts don't make money. And then that's dead simple. Because if you want to try it out and play it, if you have a novel and you think, man, I just wish I had an audiobook version because that's a whole untapped market and people keep asking me for an audiobook, $100 is nothing. And those guys will subsidize the other folks who just want to play around with it. And you know, you just bake into it that the only cost is that in every episode, it automatically watermarks it saying, this episode brought to you by Andrew's product. If you want to create your own podcast, go to blah, 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 blah. So now you're getting ads out of all that. Mm. And you say, oh, do you not like that watermark? Great. You could do a monthly subscription for $10 a month or whatever, and all your podcasts will not have that watermark. That seems like a fine dividing line. I can't imagine a single instance where an author who has a full-length novel would feel entitled to get an audiobook made out of it for free. I can't think of a single one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so worried about that. I mean, I've set it up with a credit system where you get per month, you get X number of credits that lets you convert that, and then it's going to be automatically watermarked, and then you can pay, you know, just like that. To sort of have it I haven't set up the payment thing to do. I just right now I want to test it with users and stuff, but it is that anxiety of like, oh, well, what's it look like in its moderately successful form, you know? And that's what I'm looking at now and getting worried about.
Here's what you can do is sell the option to buy in on the program to somebody basically do a demo to somebody who has money and say, I think this will be very big. I fear it will get too big too fast. If it does, if you will promise to cover the bill, then when we know we have a hit on our hands, you can pay the bill and get 10%, 30%, 50%, whatever it is you want to decide on that. And because then you remove that fear of going forward, and all it costs you is a slice of an imaginary future pie that does not yet exist. And
yeah, I mean, I can cover a substantial amount of bandwidth. Life's been good, but I'd rather do that myself than slice off something or whatever, or bring in somebody when I don't want to at this point.
But that's just it, is you get to decide when that switch is flipped. Like, yeah. you get to decide if it's happening too fast and you have too big of a hit on a hand, in which case you get to press a button and all of that money problem goes away. And now you just get free money. And granted, you're getting, let's say, half the amount of free money, but you're getting it at 10,000 times the rate that you had expected. So I understand the value of trying to keep everything in-house, but if what you're afraid of, quite literally, it sounds like another way to put what you're saying is, I'm afraid it's going to be massively successful. And if
that would be happy. The massive is happy. The middling, where I get a bunch of people want to use it, but there's nobody paying attention to it. That's the fear, is if I have a lot of content, people come put their books or put their content on there and nobody's listening to it because they find it garbage. That's my fear, is that I can get a lot of authors on board here easy. That's I'm not worried about. But if nobody wants to consume it, that's the danger for me.
Do you have a pipeline? I know you mentioned that you have it set up as a podcast solution, right? So you could spit out a podcast episode. And I know we keep jumping back to audiobooks, but do you have a pipeline to KDP or what's the KDP version of Audible?
You're not allowed to use machine translation for Audible.
Ooh,
gotcha.
That's a thing. Okay. What about a closed beta? So
that's a pretty significant, yeah.
And that's why, and that was not, I look at it as sort of a good point, because it means that because you can't do that, there's not a lot of people. All the audiobook conversion stuff I've seen so far are kind of garbage, because there's not a market like you then put it on Audible. And I said, well, I don't want to go for the Audible market. I want to create a different kind of thing, like a medium or something, you know, something that's a different way of doing, you know, text to speech. You know, I don't want to be Flickr, you know, I want to be Instagram, you know, I don't want to be that thing. I want to be a different thing.
Well, why not start with a closed beta of 50 or 100 users, and they all have to be watermarked, and says, hey, if you're digging this, apply for the closed beta at this site.
Well, they can right now at audiomatic.com. You can sign up for the beta. And that's going to be the next steps.
How many are you comfortable sharing? How many beta testers you have right now?
Nobody's been brought on, but I can do a check to see I've tweeted out a couple times. Let's see.
I also wonder if there is any sort of means of some sort of commercial product for, like, talking about Medium. If you had some sort of deal with a blog roll or a The Verge style thing, where it's like, hey, this, we can power a very easy audio version of your site that you can put into an RSS feed and maybe charge people for that.
I mean, there are WordPress plugins and stuff that do that now that let you just automatically convert your WordPress or your blog into that.
Oh, I gotcha.
And I think that what makes this different is just the background music and the other production stuff, where you have to kind of go in and put a little bit, you know, a couple minutes of time into it.
The polish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess in this case, your number one market is to find popular bloggers who have a big back catalog of, you know, 100 articles that are their greatest hits. And it's like, press this button, start your feed. You now have a weekly podcast that runs all the time with the best of your work.
Possibly. I have 38 people signed up so far for the beta.
That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, maybe throw each of them, however many credits and whatever boils down to as much as a $200 gamble on your part, and then get them started, because I don't see, as long as everything's watermarked, I don't see any downside, because what you want now is a bunch of people lined up for the beta, and the fastest way to get that is to get network effects going, where each person using it attracts more people to use it.
Mm-hmm. No, fair point. And it's that, you know, the anxiety of, like, I've had this habit, as you've seen, of me, I get things ready to be, you know, I went from, I have ideas, I throw them away, to like, I have idea, and I built this thing that's almost, it's ready for people to use, and it's like, I'm going to go do something else that's shinier, easier.
Yeah.
And then I don't.
Well, I mean, I think for you, Andrew, the thing that I think just unlocked so much of your creative energy was the book stuff, and mm-hmm. just able to, because there was like a beginning, middle, and end. I got an idea for a story. I'm going to outline the story. I'm going to write the story. I'm going to publish the story. And then you would like read a book about writing and then think about the next thing. Right. And there was not only just a repeatable full process, but then also, you know, there was momentum behind it. And that, I think, kind of cemented it. But that discipline, I think, really, really, really helped you in a lot of other areas creatively, because you kind of saw like it wasn't just, all right, well, let's do, you know, any of the million ideas that we had that would get up to a certain point. And then there was no defined end to a lot of it, right? There was like all right, well, we'll do this. We'll have this idea and we'll put this up. And then either it catches momentum or it doesn't, and that'll be the end of it. And there's always just an element of like worrying, like, okay, well, is this the time where I stop? Like, should I stop here? Or if I, is this the one thing that I got to push through for everything to be different? And just having hard defined, like, okay, I'm going to put this out for these kind of people and let's go, I think would help with this project specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I've made a commitment that I'm not going to drop it for a year, that I have to spend a year on this, because I know that you can, yeah, we get to things where we're like, let me ask people if this is a good idea or not. Unless something's like a horrible idea, like I want to sell ball peen hammers for hitting yourself in the nuts, you know?
Yeah. Hang on, let me get a pen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ball
stuff. The ball hammer. I realize that, like, if you think like, yeah, there's something there, that's the best answer you'll ever get. It's, yeah, it could be, because the best ideas at the onset, nobody knows. And sometimes you have to tweak it or this, and sometimes great ideas just crater. So sure. What matters is somebody behind them following through and paying attention and making the thing work. And so, you know, I'm past the point of like, well, let me just ask more people. And it's like, no, put the thing out there, see what happens, and then keep at it.
So I know you have, I know you've done similar things in the past, short form projects, and looking at Audiomatic, it actually seems like one of the tools that you've made that you could most use for yourself. Like, do you have plans to put any of your stories or any stuff through here? Because I think your usage of this will be a spark effect of showing people different ways, not just here's how you can convert a story into this, here's how you can convert an instructional or written part, here's how you can make a dramatized thing. Like I think if you show people and say, like, sell them on whatever that content is, because I'm sure you have tons of stories and ideas for ways to use it, I think that's going to be a strong way to kick it off.
No, 100%, Bryce. The plan is like in the next week or so is I'm going to put out a podcast or two. That's, one's going to be a podcast on writing. I'm going to take some of my books and stuff on writing and put them into episodes and just put that up, like, hey, just to make sure the podcast part of it doesn't fall apart.
Yeah.
Then move into some of my creative stuff and do another channel, because you can do multiple channels of stuff with it. It's very easy. You create podcast feeds or different stuff. Then it's to bring, once that seems to work, then yeah, because it's, I've got to go use it to show, hey, this is how you're using it, and then let other people come on board and see how they use it.
Yeah.
So
cool.
I totally agree. Yeah. Cause I mean, if I'm not going to use it, then
yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's the problem. Food tastes like dog food.
Yeah. I do think that contextualizing this helps. Like,
yeah.
If it's like, you know, we've had conversations about where this could best be used, either with, you know, certain kinds of writing communities that are very large that would never have the, you know, money to get a real audiobook, narrated audiobook done. Or, you know, I think the blog example is a great idea. If, you know, there's a lot of these great, like, personal finance blogs and stuff like that, where, you know, people are telling a kind of evergreen sort of story that like now could be a podcast. Now just like, hey, look, in 2 seconds, you could make this something that people could, you know, enjoy on another medium. So, but it's like, those are all good ideas. It's just,
hey,
you know, which of them, you know, have the rubber hit the road.
You know, what would be interesting as an experiment is to here's a way to do a side project. And maybe we'll throw this out there to anybody. I'm doing this without your permission. But imagine a scenario where there's a podcast called Story Nori, where all they do is they read old copyright-free stories. And they're for children. Project Gutenberg has a bazillion D of these. And somebody could sit down and just make a competitor to Story Nori, where all they do is take a kid's story, run through this, add the sound effects, do the voices, put the thing. And now, congratulations, you know, you have a competitor to Story Nori. And it might or especially like finding a niche that is unoccupied. That one's a little bit rougher because you're taking on an established first mover. But somebody could just do that, and then you could play. I don't know, like just tell somebody that they can use it, go nuts, and make all the money they want from that and sell ads on it, just keep the watermark on. And then and then now somebody has a side project, they've made an RSS feed and a website and their own profit incentive has them making for you the most impressive showcase later, because when they hit 100 episodes and they start pulling down, you know, 50,000 downloads per month or whatever, there's no better advertisement for your product than that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. It's one of the things, you know, I was thinking about was, man, maybe I never even open up the platform. I just use it to automate the, you know, turning a lot of content into podcasts and stuff, you know, like, oh, let me make an audio version of the Star Wars, you know, the Wikipedia, you know, the Marvel Universe, public domain, you know, free open sort of background information stuff or things like that. Cause I'm like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. Each day get a different background on something. Like there's so much content out there that I think would be wonderful to be, you know, in that format. So I think absolutely. I mean, that might be a thing that I do an example of that and then bring somebody on board, you know, convince other people this is what can be done. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I would definitely figure out a way to make sure that there's a profit motive for them so that they feel ownership of whatever it is they create. And it's like, look, man, I just have the magic tools that make it super easy for you to crank out this content.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that just is it, you know, showing people here are the things you can do with this. And, you know, when I have a podcast that put ads on it and do this and do that, you know? So yes. All right. Thank you for your help. It's been very helpful. It's what helped us.
No problem, Arthur.
Hopefully we are able to give him some advice. Who knows? any picks?
Hey, I hate myself. So I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale, season 3. I watched the first 3 episodes.
What do you think? Is it good?
I remember I watched all of season 1 and like near the end I'm like, I just feel awful. Why am I? What about this is I what you're that groan? I very much relate.
So here's the thing.
You or is this a couple thing?
This is a couple thing.
All right, you just cleared that up right there.
I was watching it without Bonnie, which
All right, here's the deal. Everything that you said, Brian, about season 1, there in season 2, there were elements that I really kind of liked in season 2 where they did a lot more on kind of the lore of Gilead. I like that. I'm down for all their creepy ceremonies. The more creepy ceremonies, the better. They had at least like one an episode, so they knew that was like a thing that they needed to hang their hat on. And then they had an intensely frustrating end to season 2, to the point where I'm almost positive that they knew how frustrating of an end it was as characters yell at our protagonist for making a stupid decision, much in the same way that the viewer would like to yell at the show for making a stupid decision. And they've effectively kind of like rebooted the show with, you know, kind of some different challenges. It seems like in this season, based on what I've seen in the first three episodes and the reviews, that it's going in a more, it's less about like, will she escape? And now more about how, you know, the resistance is working within Gilead and how Gilead is operating. So it's a little bit more kind of in the Game of Thrones stuff, but oh boy, man, they just cannot help themselves with, you know, every once in a while just dropping just a little too on the nose, like, oh, but these politics, huh? Like, here's a guy making a binders full of women joke. Remember when Mitt Romney said that?
A million years ago?
It's in the show now. Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's Handmaid's Tale. Cha-cha.
Yeah. I don't know. I they've sold this season, especially in like the trailers and stuff, as like the turning point of that story. So I hope that that is what comes of it. So I'll probably watch. But yeah, that second season ending was very, very tough.
It was, I mean, it actually made me like the show more that they spent the first half of the first episode of season three just yelling at the character, like just explaining that we know that that was very, very frustrating and dumb considering where we've gone. And I think there were some just really, really, really crazy decisions that they decided to make with the characters that are really contradictory to the fact that now in season three, some of the decisions that were made, which I kind of found to be unforgivable, like things that you can't have your characters come back from. Now those characters are like somewhat sympathetic. And it's like, well, remember when that unforgivable act happened? Like the most evil thing that could possibly happen? Like there's just, you can't come back and be like, oh no, what lovable doofuses.
Yeah.
I got a pick. It's called AT&T's increasingly good ability to shout, this is a spam phone call you're getting, and this is a telemarketer, and just labeling it as such.
Oh, that's Stir Shaken.
What's that?
That's a new protocol. We actually talked about this on my podcast. Stir Shaken is a new protocol from the FCC to try to combat robocalls. And
I love it. That's awesome. I today was the first day that I had it appear on my phone, and it made me very happy. It made me feel very justified for never answering my phone.
I love to answer it and just not, I just don't talk. Like, because if anybody who's there who would actually be calling me at some point, they would say hello, and that would be that. But with robocalls, they don't. So I just like leave it on and the birds are like tweeting in the background. I got.
Yeah. Apparently there. So this, it's a new, if you want a little bit of a news dump on this.
Yeah, please, please.
It's a new pair of protocols called Stir Shaken that the FCC wants the telecoms to implement. And there are new rules on the books for the FCC and Congress to pass that would let telecom operators make them opt out so they can get all the customers onto these protocols to actually start blocking calls that they are pretty sure are not coming from.
So this is like phase one is identify all of them and know that they have a reliable ability to identify scams or robocalls.
Right. And then phase two is open the safe harbor so that the telecoms can make those active blocking
That is a weird thing because it is sort of an implicit agreement with you and your telephone company that when somebody calls you, they will allow the call to go through.
Right, right. And so that's, you know, the companies have to get on board with the program. The protocol has to kind of work together. And then even then, it won't be perfect because at some point, these guys will just buy a bunch of AT&T phone numbers and do that next.
Right.
Or, you know, they'll find a new way. But at least in terms of call spoofing, this will be a new it's a shining ray of hope.
So I got to pay AT&T like $4 a month or whatever to block calls they should be blocking already.
I didn't pay anything. It just suddenly
AT&T
showed up.
AT&T Call Protect, the app is $4, but yeah. How did you enable it?
Oh, I didn't lift a finger. Just all of a sudden. I don't know.
It shouldn't be an app. Shake and Stir. That's the name of it. Shake and Stir should be a free telecom side thing.
Yeah, just this morning, phone calls started coming in, and it just said likely spam, likely robocall. Because
you don't have like a Mr. Number app that already does that.
Correct.
So because you just showed it up and it said AT&T alert.
Right.
Colon spam.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's like paying the post office not to deliver you junk mail.
Well, I can imagine a slider bar where it's just like, hey, here's my threshold of confidence. You know, if you're 100% certain that it's a scam, then don't bother. But if you're 80% or 40%, then send it through and then or at least give me the option to answer.
I think that those apps have a similar thing where it's like, look, things that you're sure are not real, just don't even ring them. I think they have that option. I feel like I just don't turn that on because I'm afraid it'll catch something real.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see how this all shakes out because all that stuff still has to go through. But bipartisan issue.
Yeah. Everybody's on the same page on this one.
Everyone, this stuff's going to get through. I have a preemptive pick. I watched about less than 20 minutes of this before I got, I had to drive here to this, I'm going to finish it, before Cord Killers, but I started watching the miniseries Chernobyl on HBO. It's pretty cool. It is pretty dire. My understanding is that it is very accurate, even despite the fact that it is British people doing British voices instead of doing bad fake Russian accents.
I got a friend of mine who's really into the accuracy of this and keeps sending me emails with various articles about what parts it got right and got wrong. His name's Arthur.
Oh, really?
So yeah, we had the conversation before about the accuracy of it. And right. I'm like, first I'm like, all right, I don't know enough about it. I know some of the things happened. I read some stuff about what it got right. And then I sent Brian, like, here's an article, what they got right. And then I read an article like, hey, this is all the things they got wrong. And they did get some. You know, they make radioactivity feel like it's like a contagious disease. They really, I think it's very, I haven't watched the last episode because like I hear, oh, courtroom drama about this. Sounds exciting. But I haven't watched the last episode. I find it very entertaining. It is very accurate in some ways. It is, I would say that it is very hyperbolic and exaggerated about the ancillary damages from radioactivity. And I'd say it's almost damaging and almost... very, very, it's giving many people a very wrong, bad idea about radioactivity or what happens of like, you know, somebody gets infected with it and then they've been cleaned off and all this, like, oh, don't go near them. Like, what? Do they have an endoskeleton made of metal? Like, they're not going to harm you, you know, and that's the problem is they go out of their way to make it, they really, really exaggerate a lot of the effects.
So for you, it sounds like it's such powerful art that is accurate enough. But just with the contrast turned up enough that it's sounds
a bad
like
image you, for radioactive
right,
power.
Right. That it's going to have real socio political ramifications as a result, and that's annoying.
It would be idiotic to have your opinions about nuclear energy impacted by this show. I'll put it this way: be entertained by the
show.
You
are not looking for the. At every policy discussion, somebody said, like, dude, just watch Chernobyl and then tell me whether or not you
that's
want.
Happening, though. Unfortunately, it's a thing where there's a lot of discussion and people are watching this because their only understanding it comes from this show, which has this Marvel Comics description of what radioactivity can and cannot do. And we've talked about this before. The problem is that the Soviets did a lot to downplay what happened and mitigate what happened. And then, you know, we talk like, oh, there are only like maybe 30 known deaths from Chernobyl. Well, it's after those 30. But you go like, yeah, but they also had to move hundreds of thousands of people. There's the billions of dollars of cost. It's one of these things. It's like, hey, these people who say it's not a problem. These people who say it's the worst thing ever. Like, I'm going to listen to both of you and then sort of evaluate this because I don't think the truth is somewhere in the middle, perhaps. But. You know,
I'm excited
to
watch this.
No.
Yeah. Highest, supposedly, there's only 5 episodes. It's a mini series on HBO. But I know last week it was going around, oh, the highest rated television show of all time. But it's 5, just so it's 5 episodes.
On
it's
IMDb.
Yeah.
It took the IMDb crown of highest rated show, which, you know. Man,
5 episodes, that math, that's not difficult math to do. Anyway, Chernobyl.
Hey.
Cool. Chernobyl.
All right. My pick is a show. Justin, I watched this show, and I think that like you'd be really into it because I know you like politics.
You son of a...
I'm like sitting there. I was sick last week. I'm flipping like, I want something delightful and light. Let me go back and try something again that didn't hit me the first time. And I started watching this show called Veep. Anybody else watch it?
Oh yeah, I finished it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Big fan of Veep. What'd you think?
I once you know, like, much like Breaking Bad, like for me, I had to know, like with Breaking Bad, like once I heard Vince Gilligan do an interview where he acknowledged like Walter White from the get-go was a bad guy. If you saw that in Breaking Bad, to me, the turnoff was at the beginning. I'm like, first up, like, he's really a bad guy. He's just justifying these actions because he's angry about something. Or I realized like, oh yeah, no, that's what it's about. I'm like, oh, okay, now I can get on board of the show because it's not like they're trying to make this guy to be a hero and he's not. It's like, no, he's clearly a bad guy. We'll just wait to see how long before the audience catches on. Mm-hmm. Veep, they're horrible. They're horrible people. They're all horrible. It's politics, which is a very accurate thing. You know, as soon as something bad happens, there's this, well, who do we scapegoat? And they're delightful. Like, well, get rid of this person, get rid of that person. And then comes around to their turn. And so it's kind of delightful in that, in watching this just nastiness. And then with, you know, Selena Myers is a horrible, horrible person, you know.
And they really do lean into it in that final season. The
final season is like irredeemable. It is a very nihilistic end to that show, but it does stick the landing in terms of the point, because you're right, Andrew, there can be no redemption.
Yeah,
to these people, like, it is just a constant a parade of, well, how do we spin this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there is no moral center. There is only winning.
Yeah. I think I'm in season 3 or just started 4 or whatever. Wow. I'm enjoying it. Enjoying the, you know, the humor. Tony Hale, love him. He's great. Great cast all around. So.
Yeah. It's one of those shows that. Armando Iannucci, who did
the British version.
Yeah, yeah. The Thick of It, and then. Is it In the Loop? That is basically like his. It's kind of like a crossover event. I think it might have been pre Veep, but it's a lot of the same actors from Veep. But it was a send up of the, like, run up to the Iraq War with all the In the Loop character, or sorry, Thick of It characters coming to America and dealing with that kind of stuff. And then Veep comes after that. It's great. He does, you know, a certain thing really, really well, but it's well done. It's really funny.
Yeah, I'm excited about the arc of one character who just got spoiled for me a little bit looking it up, because one of the most annoying characters on there, I texted Justin, I said, this is the best turn since Jamie Lannister of a character everybody hates, you hate, whatever, and then something happens to him or all of a sudden he's a victim and he's sympathetic. And it's like, I'm like, this is brilliant. Now I'm rooting for the guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I forget what season it's in, but it's one of the funniest as that character continues to evolve. He becomes a bigger and bigger part of the show. But there's a line, there's just a picture perfect, like, put it in a museum, hilarious scene as he continues to find his destiny, which is,
yeah. So there you go. It's my pick. You all good?
Yeah.
All right. Arthur, thanks you. It's been after.
It's been Arthur.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.